Hi, this is James Devine, and I am an educator who has come out of the trenches. Listen in as my friend and colleague Dana Goodyear shares stories and tips from other educators who have come out of the trenches.
Welcome to the Out of the Trenches podcast. This is Dana Goodyear. Thanks for listening.
The guest on the Out of the Trenches podcast today is Anitra Gallegos. She is a principal of Panorama Middle School in Colorado Springs, Colorado. She has 10 years leadership experience and 7 years experience as a classroom teacher. She has worked with nonprofit organizations on race-conscious pedagogy and educational equity. She holds an MA from Capella University, where she conducted research on assessment practices and data disaggregation. She has recently been recognized in her district for her work with ELLs and received the English Language Development Ambassador Award. And she set up a re-engagement center for special populations at the high school level. Welcome to the podcast, Anitra.
Good morning. Thank you so much, Dana. I'm so happy to be here. I just really am glad that you asked me to be here. And so thank you for sharing the time and space for me to tell my story. It's really encouraging.
Well, I'm excited to hear about your story. In the pre-chat, we mentioned several areas that you'd like to touch on. And I think what you want to lead in with today is talking a little bit about your childhood, your own educational experience, and how that's led you to be an effective educator, and the challenges that you went through during your childhood that kind of relate to where you're a principal right now. So go ahead and talk to me a little bit about your background.
Absolutely. So like more and more children that we see on a regular basis, my childhood was fun and awesome in a lot of ways, but it was also fraught with a lot of challenges that were placed upon me, and many were placed upon me by my own choices. And so growing up, we didn't have a lot of money. My parents did the best that they could. My mom only had a high school education. My dad had a couple of years of community college, but nobody had ever gotten an advanced degree. There was a lot of challenges in the home, you know, sometimes rough around the house. When there are financial issues and other issues, that sometimes tends to snowball. And so I got lost really early on in my childhood, started making choices that were not indicative of really who I was. I was kind of what I like to call like a kaleidoscope kid or a chameleon kid. Like no matter who I was with, like I could shift and make myself fit the mold, but I never really fit anywhere. And so that tended to happen like a lot through my elementary and then into my middle school years. And so the more and more I just tried to find my place, the more and more I found that like I just didn't fit anywhere. And so that created this tremendous need for belonging. And then having some of the family struggles that I had, unfortunately, I made the choice and I reached out for acceptance, and I found that in a gang. And I was actually jumped into a gang in high school and was actively participating in not great activity all the way up until like I entered into college, like my freshman year. I was still kind of messing around with things that I shouldn't have. And through the grace of God and through the forgiveness of him in my experience, I was able to turn things around. And along that path in school, no matter what choices I was making, there was always this part inside of me that knew that this wasn't all that I was meant for. Mm-hmm. I just knew that I was intended for more. And like I said, I was seeking that out. I was seeking out a lot of validation. And my teachers, many of my teachers breathed life into me when nobody else would see me. My teachers would see me. And on the flip side, I also had some educators say some very hurtful things to me. And I'll share one that is like one of the most impactful statements that was ever said to me by a teacher. It was my sophomore year in high school. I had actually just started getting pretty heavy into the gang stuff, but I was like wicked smart. And so I actually took advanced classes, like as this little gangster girl. Like there was all these like smart, you know, well put together, well seemed to be well put together children. And then there was me like in all my dumpster fireness. I don't even know how else to describe it. But there was me. And I remember loving school. I remember loving learning. And it was a chemistry class. And my teacher, I had forgot my homework. And for super high achievers or people that are really intrinsically driven, I really wanted to make sure I had worked really hard on that chemistry homework and I wanted to turn it in. So I rose my hand like a good student and asked if I could go to my locker and get my homework. And the teacher said in front of the entire class, absolutely, but please remember that I don't accept homework and spray paint. Mm. And the whole class like burst into laughter. Mm-hmm. I mean, I still get a little choked up thinking about that. That's that was so embarrassing. I felt like this big. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I was making choices at that time that weren't good, but that was my teacher. And I was humiliated. I remember I went to the office. I didn't even go to my locker. I went to the office and I called my mom and I was sobbing. Because that was back in the day when people didn't have phones in their pocket. We had to go to the office. And I called her and I was crying and I was just like, I need you to just excuse me from this class. I'm not going back. Like, I'm not going back. And she was like, yeah, you are. Yeah, you are. You're not going to let him say that to you. And my mom was not proud of the decisions I was making, but my mom always had my back. Mm-hmm. And she was like, no, you're not going to have anybody talk to you like that. You're going to go back in there and you're going to get the highest grade. And she was like, and you're going to turn in that homework. And that's what I ended up doing. I didn't end up talking again in that class. Mm-hmm. I didn't say anything else. That happened in like October. Mm-hmm. I didn't say anything. And I got the highest grade in the class. And then when I came back to do my master's hours, I ran into that individual,
wow,
that teacher. Mm-hmm. And I actually thanked him.
Wow.
I thanked him. I said, thank you so much for what you taught me. And he was like, oh, did you become he's like, were you a chemistry teacher before you started doing? And I was like, no, I was an English teacher. Mm-hmm. But I said, I thank you for what you taught me about how to treat students. Mm-hmm. And I could have clapped back. Mm-hmm. Like I could have like laid into him, but you know what? Like he taught me something very valuable. Mm-hmm. That carries with me to this day. And that is that the words that educators speak mm-hmm. towards students, to students, ring in their ears. I mean, I am 25 years removed from that situation. Mm-hmm. And that still invokes like crazy emotion. Mm-hmm. Because I felt horrid. I felt horrible about myself. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't help kids be better. That doesn't help education be better. But, you know, and then I had teachers at that same school who made me rewrite a paper 9 times because he knew that I was not a C student. And I would change one word and be stubborn. And he was like, oh, okay, you changed that one word, rewrite it. I rewrote a paper on the hollow men 9 times for Dexter Constant because he believed in me. And he was like, you're an A student. Give me an A paper. Mm-hmm. And I learned from him that unceasing belief in somebody can really change their lives. And it was that paper on the Hollow Men and that experience that propelled me to becoming an educator. I knew, I loved, I'm going to get emotional again talking about this teacher. I loved the way he made me feel about myself. Mm-hmm. He breathed life into me. He saw past what everybody else was refusing to see. Mm-hmm. And he pushed me. And I remember being like, man, I want to do that. I want to do that for people. Mm-hmm. And that paper and that experience was the catalyst that truly changed my life. Mm-hmm. It really did. It was, if had it not been for that paper, I don't know where I'd be.
Did you get to go back and thank that teacher?
Yes, I actually ran into him when I became a teacher. He mm-hmm. was just ending up his retirement, and I was a track coach, and he was a track coach, and we were at the same track meet. And I saw him, and I was like, Mr. Constant! Like, I freaked out, and I was just like, you have no idea what you mean to me. And he was like, oh, it was so good to see you. And I don't really think he understood, because yeah. He was like, oh, it's so good to see you, girlfriend. And he was just this big guy. And he was just this larger than life guy. And Ms. Gallegos, it's so nice to see you. And I was like, Mr. Constant. But I don't think he ever really grasped what he did for me. Sure. And I don't think teachers sometimes understand their impact. And I've actually looked for him, and he's on LinkedIn, and mm-hmm. but he doesn't like check his stuff, because I sent a connection like eons ago and still pending. And I'm like, come on, bud, like accept it so I can like just express to you what you did for me. Mm-hmm. And that is, and I see that, you know, and as an educator, I have seen teachers do that. Mm-hmm. I've actually watched
it play.
Adults change lives. Yeah. And it's, oh, there's nothing better. There is nothing better. This is the best career mm-hmm. in the world. I don't care what anybody says. There's no amount of money that can equate or quantify what it means to change a life.
Correct.
Truly.
And a lot of times,
that's a little bit of my story.
Yeah, a lot of the time we don't see the impact. You know, you just happen to run into that teacher at a track meet. A lot of time we don't get to go back and thank those teachers. I mean, no. I became a foreign language teacher, and I was able to thank those teachers, you know, 7 years later after I finished my master's. I went back to that school and they were still working there. And, you know, it's just great to be able to tell those teachers what they meant to you and, you know, how they changed your life. So what I hear you say is that you were that kind of chameleon kid that kind of lived two lives, right? You were evolving.
Yes, yes.
You were a high achiever. Mm-hmm. And you were able to succeed and become an educator because of the potential those teachers saw in you.
I used to lie to like my gang member homies mm-hmm. and tell them, because they were like, how come you're not in any of our classes? Because I wasn't. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, I'm in the dumb classes, man. No, 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 no. Anitra was in the smart classes. smart. And I was up there. But I mean, I couldn't be authentic to who I was, you know. And it bothered me for a long time. Like even the one place I sought my true acceptance, I was still lying. I was still lying about who I was. And the thing is that adults that took the time to see me, my coaches, my teachers, some of my youth pastors, some of those other organizations that I was a part of, like LULAC and METJA and you know, National Hispanic Institute, those types of things, like they peeled back layers. And each time like that happened, like I felt like more and more of myself could be seen. Mm-hmm. I didn't know how to do that for myself. And I, as a young adult, mm-hmm. we have to teach them how to be reflective upon themselves. We will never be able to really, like, there is no button that we press and be like, that's a reset, and it changes everything. What we do is we become the catalyst. We connect with an individual and we unlock something in them.
Yeah, correct.
And they do it.
Yep.
But I was shown how to look at myself through the eyes of somebody who really cares about Anitra. Mm-hmm. Because I couldn't do it for myself. I didn't know how to. But I needed those adults, those teachers to pour that into me. And then I was able to do it for myself. And now when I talk to kids about their decisions or those things, I do the same thing with them. I try to show them, hey, like these are the steps you need to take mm-hmm. to start thinking about the trajectory of your life, the choices that you make, and the longstanding impact.
Mm-hmm. And I think what you're talking about, the educator becomes that catalyst. That's what helped you realize yourself and your potential.
Absolutely.
You know, how when you graduated from high school, you wanted to be that teacher, you wanted to serve others and have that servant leadership that's now followed you through to the yes. principalship.
Yes. And I learned that as an educator, educating is an operation in tightrope walking. Mm-hmm. It is, you're always having to balance it. You have to balance that accountability, mm-hmm. that care and concern. You have to balance thinking through problems and logic, and then you have to balance that with the heart space, and sometimes what's best for kids might not always be best mm-hmm. for adults, or not always the cheapest answer, you know, like funding and those types of things. It's a constant tightrope walking. And, you know, it's not easy. Mm-hmm. It's not easy. And especially as things are changing in education, you know, from, you know, even just taking COVID, mm-hmm. like our system was not ready for this. Mm-hmm. And no system was. I mean, we were completely exposed. And the chasm of inequalities and inequities that became even more glaring, you know, the haves still have, and the have-nots mm-hmm. really don't have. Mm-hmm. And the amount of trauma and things that teachers need to be aware of outside of just the scope and sequence of curricula. Mm-hmm. They have to know how to create a culturally and linguistically diverse educational system. Mm-hmm. They have to be able to manage a trauma-informed classroom. They have to be able to utilize standards. And I mean, the things that we ask our teachers to do on top of caring, mm-hmm. they are amazing. I mean, I being able to serve teachers as a principal, mm-hmm. this is my dream come true. Mm-hmm. This is like, hallelujah. Like, I'm so glad that I finally get to rubber stamp stuff for teachers. Because mm-hmm. I was always like, man, if I get a chance to be the principal, I'm going to do this. And now I'm like, now I get to do this. Yeah. Now, I mean, no, like, I've always wanted to just, like, create this space where joy meets rigor, mm-hmm. meets community, meets, you know, dreams, and just, and I know that where I'm going, this school that I have, that I'm going to, has a lot of opportunity, mm-hmm. has a lot of opportunity, and it's going to take everybody being on board to start moving the needle. But I'll tell you what, that staff, my admin, the kids, the community, they are worth every bit of bottled, like how many times I'm gonna have to color my hair over the next 6-7 years, because I know it's gonna get gray, but it's worth, they're worth it. They're worth every hair dye job. They are worth every single one of them. And every wrinkle that I'm gonna get, I am so excited for it, because it means changed lives.
Yeah.
If I can create an entire school, and if every one of those teachers just does that, what Dexter Constant did for me, just not even life change, just pour into one kid every year, just one. And we have, and we just build upon that. And I'm hoping it's way more than one, but just the true impact of one kid, man, if every teacher did that, I would be successful.
Yeah.
They would be successful. The kids would be successful.
Yeah.
I want the community to feel, because of my students and what they bring out of that building and put back into the community, I want it just to feel different.
Yeah.
Just a little bit. Just a little bit. Just a little nicer. Just a little kinder.
Yeah.
We pick up our trash. You know, I don't care what it is.
Truly changing, and truly changing that school culture from the inside out. You know, because as we discussed in the pre-chat, it starts from the top. It starts from how you model as a principal, pride in the school, care for each other. You talked a little bit in the pre-chat about just some of those ideas that you have for the staff and you have for the students to show pride in the school. Can you talk a little bit about those?
Absolutely. So one of the first things that I did was I met with my admin team and I talked to them. I said, what are some of your biggest hopes, dreams, wishes, and wants for the school? And they were like, culture, we got to get our culture like strong and thriving. And we talked about, you know, the first thing that anybody sees when they come to a school is what? What do you see when you come into a school?
The outside, and if there's trash on the ground.
The outside. So you know, one of the first things I told my admin team, I was like, I'm so glad that you guys said that. I'm like, cause you know what we're going to do? We're going to do that curb appeal. Curb appeal means so much. I think people underestimate that. So, we are going to be flooding, as much as humanly possible. Funds were cut. So we're going to become, very, 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 creative, but we are going to, we're going to do these things called, Rocks of Hope.
Okay.
And so, that's going to be one of the things that we do for curb appeal that includes our students. So, I'd really like for every class to have a different color. We are royal blue, gold and white. Mm-hmm. And so each class gets a color. Every kid gets a rock and they paint the whole rock, and then they put a word or a hope, like a hopeful word or an actual hope for themselves on it. Mm-hmm. And we place it in front of the school and it stays there, because this is where we plant our dreams. Mm-hmm. This is where we, and it's a rock. It's a rock because it's solid. It's gonna stay there. It's got weight. It means something. And we're going to keep adding to those, and we're going to use those to really spruce up, like, because if we have these different colors, like, we're going to do, you know, we're going to make almost like mosaic type designs around in our little yard area. So I'm like jazzed about that kind of stuff. So we're going to be doing some Rocks of Hope. Some of the climate and culture stuff that we're going to be doing is at some point we'd like to develop some what we call safe zones. Mm-hmm. Safe zoning is having teachers who are on plan. One of the things that sometimes happens in schools that have lots of opportunities and several challenges is that sometimes class coverage or having substitutes is difficult. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of giving up of plan times. And so one of the things that I would like to do to change the culture around my building specifically and utilizing teachers and their plans in a way that is honoring to them and not, you know, changing culture. But I want teachers to have their classrooms become safe zones for kids who might have a low level infraction, but just need a place to cool out. It's not quite an infraction that needs to go to the office, but if they're not chilled, it could escalate very quickly. I want some of these teachers to open up their classrooms to just let students chill. And these would be very selected teachers. This is not something that I would, this is something that is a, just a thought right now, but we're talking about how do we utilize our teachers to build relationships, and create an ownership of all students throughout the building. And that's the other thing. And this would be, you know, they would maybe one or two teachers a couple times a day have a safe zone. And it's just for re-engaging kids into the learning environment. Because as a classroom teacher, a lot of the times when we have these small escalations, especially at middle grades, because we all know middle schoolers, they don't got those frontal lobe connections, man. They're off the rail half the time. Like when they say, I don't know, they really don't know why they just did that. So for real, they don't. So having an opportunity for another teacher to be able to process with that kid and know that that teacher is truly going to process with them and that you understand, like if you say, hey, I need you to safe zone, and that we build this community where safe zoning is wanted. Like kids might say, hey, I need a safe zone right now. Because when we can do those things and just take 5 minutes to really just say, hey, you know what? I'm here for you. Talk to me. Because I'll tell you what I've discovered is that 90% of the time, kids just want to be heard.
And the traditional way, of kids getting sent out of class, sent to the office, probably waiting an hour.
And then they sit there. Yes, and then they sit there in the office for 30 minutes waiting for the dean or the AP or whoever to see them. Then they're seething, and then they've lost out on all this learning. If we have safe zoning, that's for low-level stuff. Like a kid acts like seriously a fool, like, you know, that's a different level, and that's when we do what we need to do. But you know what? No matter what happens in my building, we don't yell at kids. We don't yell. We don't degrade or disrespect our students. We hold them accountable and we're firm, but we do it. We coach them through it. We try to get them to be reflective about what they did, what the impact was. Give them a replacement behavior, and then reconnect them into the learning environment. And a lot of people say, oh my gosh, that takes so much time. We don't have time to do all of that because we have to get through the curriculum. Well, guess what? If your class is a mess, you might be able to check the boxes that say, yes, you got through the lessons, but did they learn? Because if kids are getting kicked out and there's all this behavior, I guarantee you they didn't learn.
That's correct.
Look at the data. Data doesn't lie. Data always tells a story, and people don't like that. People don't like when I say that, but I'm like, hey, stop me when I lie. Stop me when I lie. Because it's absolutely the truth. Absolutely. And I say we take the time to care and coach kids through these things, and we teach them life skills, because they're learning something. It may not be what the skills that the state requires, but they are the skills that human nature requires in order to be successful. So I'm going to teach them something.
Yeah.
I'm going to spend that time teaching them something, because once they learn that stuff, that is intellectual property. That's going to be stored there. And if they can start drawing on that, I guarantee you, when it's time to start doing that academics, we're going to get it.
Yeah.
We're gonna get it.
Yeah.
But none of that can happen until culture is in place.
Yeah. And I think that's taking us into one of our other points in our pre-chat, just thinking outside the box and the new ideas that you have to tackle these old problems, right? You're going into a building that has had problems for years and it hasn't really changed. And these ideas that you're talking about, you know, getting kids back in the classroom, them re-engaging in the material, them taking pride in their learning, us bringing out the full potential in these kids. Because a lot of the time, these kids, you know, they're living in poverty. They have a lot of ACEs in their families. You know, they're just, especially coming back in the fall after COVID, they're going to be coming with a lot of trauma. So, you know, we want to be able to bring staff on board and you know, help the staff coming. You're starting with the staff when you're doing these chats with them. You know, at the end of this school year, leading into the staff development days in August. You know, you're giving those non-negotiables. We're not going to yell at kids. We're not going to degrade them, you know, because that follows you, like you said, that follows you 25 years later.
Yes.
You some other thoughts that you have of tackling some of these long, just long-going issues that have occurred in that area where those students live?
Well, I think first is recognizing that's a perception.
Mm-hmm.
That is very much a perception of that community. So I lived in that community.
Mm-hmm.
When I taught down when I was a teacher way back in the day,
mm-hmm.
And I was a teacher in Colorado Springs, that's where I lived. I lived in that community. And I'll tell you what, I never had any crime happen to me. I never had anything happen to my property. None of my neighbors did. That was probably the most caring neighborhood that I've lived in. And I've lived in, you know, some areas that would be considered more affluent as I've gotten a little bit older. And I'll tell you what, the people in the hood are really, really nice.
Mm-hmm.
They'll help you. And so I want to get the kids out of that thought that mm-hmm. I live in the hood.
Sure.
No, you live in Colorado Springs.
Mm-hmm.
I live in the hood. No, 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 no. You live with your parents. I go to school in the hood. No, 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 no.
Mm-hmm.
You go to the best school in Colorado Springs. No, it's not. Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Because you're here.
Yeah.
Ooh, dang. Change that narrative.
Yeah.
Those are the things. I am some of those new ideas is being very, very, very intentional mm-hmm. about the economy of our language. Mm-hmm. My educational leadership coach talked to me a lot about the economy of language.
Mm-hmm.
He was always talking to me about the words that you use and how you use them and how many you use.
Mm-hmm.
Really says a lot about you and what your thought process is. So you need to pay attention to that. And when he was saying that to me, I really took that to heart and I started listening.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I'm going to, that's one of the things I'm going to be doing this summer is I'm going to be having a series of videos going out to my staff to prep them. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be talking to them about the trauma-informed classroom. I'm going to be talking to them about all of these things that my 2 days before the beginning of the school year will not allow me to do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If I want my staff to be a step ahead of everybody else, then guess what I have to do as the leader? I gotta burn through the summer.
Mm-hmm.
I have to give... I'm not giving them anything to read. You, You know, I've given them videos. You pop that thing on, you cook your dinner. I know where some people watch videos doing whatever. I don't care if you, I don't care if that's what you do while you're watching my video. Like, you know, go to the bathroom, take a shower. I don't care. Just put it on, listen to it. And just start getting ideas. So I'm going to be doing some on a reflective series on, you know, what do you know about your kids? Like when you're planning, do you, are you thinking about the kid that has no tech? Are you thinking about the kid who forgets every single thing, every second of every day that you have to like hold everything over them? Like, you know, like, here's your pencil, here's your paper. Like, are you thinking about that kid? Are you thinking about the English language learner? Are you thinking about the kid who you worry about every day comes in hungry? How are they gonna do their homework? Are you thinking about the homeless kid? Are you thinking about your high achieving kid? We forget about that one. All the time. All the time. That is, and I'll tell you what, there are, I want to increase my amount of identified gifted students because I know that there is far more giftedness than my data shows. And I want to, and that's a long-term goal of mine. But I definitely want to start looking at the identification process.
Yeah.
And I think and how we can support learners in that, because I think that I don't think that we identify as many as we should or as we could, and so, you know, especially with the high population of English language learners, sometimes that identification piece is missed because they're missing the linguistic piece, working on those types of things. But reflective series, I'm going to be having them look at the language that they use in all of their papers that they hand out. How many times are you using the word no? No this, no that, no word no. You can, you're an adult and I can help you with this, but we're going to frame things in a positive way. Not no food or water in my class. Food and water are to be consumed in the cafeteria. Jeez, that sounds so much nicer.
Correct.
You know? And there and that right there starts that dignity and respect. I'm gonna challenge my teachers to start asking themselves, is their language dignified? Are they modeling respect? What does respect look like to them? Because respect looks like a lot of different things to a lot of different people. And so I could say, because I know some teachers, respect means sitting there quietly. And okay, I see that more as compliance, but if that's their definition of respect, okay, well then you need to define that. Or why is that respect? Is that compliance? So can I sit here like this and have a nasty little scowl on my face? Like, is that still respectful? I'm sitting there, I'm quiet, but I got this going on. Like, we have to define things and we have to come up with unified understandings.
And I think that's a great point you bring out, because as teachers, we look at student behavior and if they have that scowl on their face and how they're showing respect or disrespect. But as a leader, I think looking at how the staff's showing respect, right? When you're in that setting, either with staff or staff to students, you know, how is their body language? We don't think about the adult body language and kind of what we're portraying to students or other staff members. So that's a great thing to think about and have those teachers reflect on over the summer.
I ask them a lot. I ask people a lot, like when they go really hard at a student sometimes for, you know, I told this student four times that they needed to turn in their homework. And I told them I was going to be here this day, and this day. Okay. And they didn't get it done. And so I yelled at them, or I told them to get out of my class until I got it. I said, okay, so what would happen if you forgot a paperwork, like your I-9 at home? And I said, hey, I need everybody's I-9 in the staff meeting. And you were like, I don't have it. And I was like, get out of my staff meeting until you have it. Yo, grievance.
Yeah.
Anitra would be fired. Right?
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. That would be, I mean, I would have a grievance slapped on me faster than, like, I don't know. Like, it would be fast. But why do we feel emboldened to do that to kids? And the thing is that I want our, I really want to start framing this idea of that, yes, I know they act silly. I know they got some funky behavior. I know sometimes you want a teeth talk when you're talking like this in your teeth. That's teeth talking.
Yeah.
You know, I know you want a teeth talk sometimes, but we have to remember, these are, at my level, these are 11-year-olds to 14-year-olds. They were just in the single digits, like this many ago, you know?
And we forget that. A lot of them look older, and we forget they're still children in their prefrontal cortex.
They do not have the skills. They don't have the skills. Heck, half the adults don't have the skills. You know? Why do we hold children to standards that we ourselves don't, that we don't hold ourselves to? We want understanding when we're having a bad day. We want care, consideration, and a little bit of heart space when something goes sideways with us. And we're older, and we've had more trips around the sun. And most of us know that it's probably going to be okay at the end. But we still demand things of children that we don't hold ourselves to. We have an obligation to teach them the skills and to teach them how to process those things. You know, I've had some kids say some funky things to me, and I'm like, oh, okay, you were talking to me. All right. So, and I don't, like, who do you think you're talking to? No, I'm like, oh, honey, that is, you must really be hurting to talk to me like that, because I know I've not done anything to deserve that tone of voice. I've been nothing but caring to you. So you must really be hurting. And when you start getting out of their head, because a lot of the kids that come, that have a lot of behavioral problems, they're used to getting that hammer. That's what they get all the time.
Yeah.
Blah, 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 blah. And they know how to handle that. You want to change behavior? Don't give them that hammer. You give them that heart space. Man, you look like you are so sad right now. I have had more kids come into my office like friggin' just like off the wall, get ready to like tear things up. And I'm just calm, and I'm like, wow, you need some water. Like, man, you look like you are really hurting right now. And then they're just like, and it's like, and you know who does it a lot? Who does it the most?
Those big boys.
Boys.
Yep.
And because we're not teaching the boys that it's okay to have emotion. We no longer honor our boys of white, black, brown, doesn't matter. Our boys are some of the most underserved. We have groups for girls, you know, we have girls empowerment groups because, you know, as women, we're like, we're not going to leave it to anybody else to bring us up. You know, we just going to bring ourselves up. And so that's why we take care of ourselves. Mm-hmm. But, you know, sometimes that we don't have that kind of stuff for boys. It's suck it up. God, how dare you feel? Mm-hmm. And then we wonder why we have, you know, grown men playing, 45 years old playing PlayStation and they mama's. We're not meeting their emotional needs. We're not meeting their academic needs. We're having, you know, look at the rate of scholarships. Look at scholarshipping. Mm-hmm. The increase of the female scholarship recipients. Women are doing our thing. We're doing our thing. We're coming up, but we're the guys. It's still their world, but we're not training them to take over the world. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? We're not really putting in the work. And so we have these young men that are in a lot of pain. And so they rage.
Yeah. And I think that also comes from a lot of these boys are living in families where they don't have that positive male role model. And and they're bringing out the rage and just the frustration at school from not having those role models.
And no matter how much a mama tries, a mama can never be a daddy. Mm-hmm. Just as much as a daddy can never be a mommy, mm-hmm. You know, and it's a dynamic of the world. Now, I mean, the nuclear family is almost like a thing of the past.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
And so how do we inform our practices mm-hmm. around that? And how do we provide opportunities for these young men to engage with positive men? Mm-hmm. I'll tell you what, one of the first things I did was I found out who some of the major male-based organizations mm-hmm. For especially like men of color, and I've reached out. I was like, hey, I'm the principal. I'd really love for you to come and just talk to me about how you can support our school.
Great.
I mean, I reach out because the thing is they're not going to come to me. They're not going to come to me and say, hey, I want to help your school. I'm like knocking down people's doors.
Yeah, you need to put yourself out there and see
yes.
the community.
Yes. And I mean, I'm excited. Like I'm trying to make connections with business organizations, military, mm-hmm. You know, Air Force Academy. We have a lot of military installations. A lot of these kids come from military families. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of that respect and understanding of what it means to be military. Mm-hmm. And I think that resonates a lot with some of the boys and some of these guys that that are willing to come and do some of this work. Man, they're the real deal. They understand that they have an obligation beyond just their own families. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They have a community obligation. Mm-hmm. And it's been great to start establishing these contacts because the one thing that Panorama should be is a safe place for community members to come to. Mm-hmm. And I want my doors are open. My doors are open to anybody that wants to come and help make the students and the school better. Mm-hmm. Anybody. And my doors are very guarded against those that are going to try to come in and do the opposite, because that certainly isn't going to happen.
Yeah, I think that brings us into our last point of you were discussing. You have your four L's of
four I's
of transformational leadership. that you'd like to talk to, because I think you brought up some great points of what you're planning on how you want to change the community and bring positive culture into your school.
You know, one of the things that I've developed in pursuit over the, in the last decade, because I knew I wanted to be a principal. And so being super high achiever, like I backwards planned, I was like, all right, I want to have this. So these are the things I need to do. And one of my mentors early on told me, build a skill set, build a unique skill set, and define your leadership pillars, and then base everything upon that. And I got that, like, I think it was like my second year in leadership. And man, was that really powerful advice. And so because of that, I've come up with my four I's, which is integrity, intention, instruction, and inspiration. So, you know, integrity, it speaks to itself, you know. I'm honest. I am very transparent as a leader. Anything that I ever do or expect of my staff or students, I will model myself. It's the reciprocal accountability. I am accountable first, and then you can be accountable. Anything that I require, I must equate in an equitable amount of support, because that honors the integrity of the teachers as well. I will hold teachers to a high level of integrity. Be honest with me about what it is that you're doing and where you're at in your journey. If there are things that are difficult for you, I want to hear that. I would rather hear that something is super hard so I can coach you and help and support you through it, rather than be like, yeah, everything's good, and then it just be like this total like storm in the class. And so that's really integrity. Integrity is the base for everything. And then I move into intentionality. So again, I have learned to become incredibly intentional about everything I do, whether it is, you know, how I end my emails, how I start my emails, the way I start a meeting, the way I speak to people, how often I compliment. Like, I don't just say, hey, that's a great job. It's like, Dana, you did such an amazing job putting this podcast together. Your questions were spot on. They honored me and my time, and I really appreciate you. Boom! Yeah. Dang! That's a compliment. You know what I'm saying? Because when you put thought and you model that thought, I'm always thinking and I'm always talking about, well, this is how we need to be thinking about the problem, and always intentional from the way I even communicate with kids. Like when kids are in crisis, my voice never goes up. I always bring it down. And I always bring myself actually lower than them. Like if they're in their desk, I get down. I mean, it's not hard for me to get lower than people, because I'm like, ha 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 ha. Yeah, that was a funny. Hard being midget status, but I'm not a midget. I'm 5 feet, but whatever. Just that intentionality around everything that we do, from how we honor our time and what we spend our time in. And to be a leader that's going to transform anything, you must not be flippant. Everything must be precise. Because flippancy means that kids lose. So, instruction, well, that says it all. Like, I believe that in order to be a leader in any educational realm that you must be an instructional leader. You have to know instruction. The days of good old boys and moving on up through that, you just can't be that kind of principal anymore. You just can't. There are so many demands. And so in order to be able to provide your teachers with the highest quality of professional development and to demand the highest level of instruction for your students, you must know what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. I have, and this ties into that intentionality. I have made sure that I have read up on all different types of instruction. I have years and years of observational data mm-hmm. on great instruction, things that work, things that don't, mm-hmm. things that work for certain types of teachers. I mean, when teachers come to me and they say, hey, look, I'm struggling with this, instructional conversations are some of my favorite conversations to have. Mm-hmm. And I will pop my collar a little bit on this one. Mm-hmm. I have had such tremendous feedback from some of my veteran teachers about the quality of instructional leadership that I provide. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of veteran teachers, you know, they're great and they get the obligatory, you're doing such a good job. You know, man, we appreciate your 15 years here, your 18 years here. And I'll tell you what, those teachers are tired of hearing that. They don't want that. They're sick of it. They're like, really?
It doesn't show that you see them and see what they do.
Oh, I always ask my veteran teachers, like I come in and I'm like, so here are all the ideas. And they're like, are you serious? And when they're done, they're like, man, that is such a great idea. Because I'm like, one of the first things I ask them is, are you still teaching today the way you mm-hmm. taught 5 years in when you were on fire? Mm-hmm. And they're like, no. I'm like, why not? Well, I mean, just cause. And I'm like, well, let's get back there. Mm-hmm. Boom. And, you know, just giving them different ideas, they love it. I mean, and the thing is, I just have to like give them one or two ideas and they just and they go with it and it's beautiful. So being an instructional leader is really, really important. And it's a part of that growth piece for both staff and students. And then the final thing is inspiration. Mm-hmm. The inspiration doesn't come from me. Mm-hmm. People say that I've inspired them and that's great. And I'm happy about that. But the part of my leadership that comes from inspiration comes from my staff and my students. Mm-hmm. I am inspired by the students who have nothing positive in their life mm-hmm. except their school. And they dare to believe in themselves. I am inspired by the single parents that work unceasingly to make sure that, their kids have opportunities. I'm inspired by the teachers who stay hour after hour mm-hmm. for kids that aren't theirs and spend money that they don't have mm-hmm. so that somebody else has something, so that these kids have a future. Those are the things that keep me going. Those are the reasons why I give day in and day out, because I need to provide the right type of opportunity for those teachers, for those kids, and for those parents. They're counting on me and the leadership that I provide for that school to make it happen. I don't have the luxury of, you know, taking my sweet time to try to get it right.
Yeah, like everything you've talked about, you're hitting the ground running even before the previous school year ended, you know, after having been hired, you hit the ground running.
Oh yeah.
You're so intentional on how you're going to lead. And I think that's great. You know, the inspiration doesn't come from you. It comes from all those around. And showing those teachers your appreciation by being in the classroom and pointing out, you know, what you see and giving them tips, those veteran teachers that probably rarely get an observation, right? They only are observed when the one or two mandatory times a year. And then you come by and you see what they do. I think, you know, you point out so many things that are truly going to give those, the staff, the parents, the kids, the community at the school, just a way to, you know, take pride in their school and take pride in their community. I think as we wrap up the podcast, is if there's one thing you want our listeners to remember, what would that be?
You, as an educator, have the power to build or break a world mm-hmm. for a person. Mm-hmm. That's what I would leave them with. And are you going to be the person that builds it, or are you going to be a breaker? Mm-hmm. How are you going to wield that? Mm-hmm. Because every day, that's a tremendous amount of power. Mm-hmm. And we wield that power for, if you're an elementary school teacher, 30 kids, middle school or high school teacher, anywhere from 100 to 150 kids. That's a lot of power. It's a lot of worlds.
Mm-hmm. You're touching that many lives. You're not only touching the lives of your students, but those of the parents, other staff members. So I think this conversation has really been really great listening and hearing your story and everything. And how can people get in touch with you? Where can people find you on social media?
Well, you can find me on LinkedIn. And it's just Anitra Gallegos. And you can also find me on Facebook at Panorama Middle School. So we have our own Facebook page, and I'm going to be I actually just did my intro video for my families the other day. And so that's up there. And I'm going to be keeping my community abreast of things that are going on. I will probably be dropping a few of my instructional or reflection videos in LinkedIn just to see, get some feedback from other educators, like, hey, this is helpful. No, it's not. Like, we can see up your nose, whatever kind of feedback they want to give me. I don't care. It's all good. I'm pretty flex.
Yeah, I'll be watching those and giving you feedback.
I know. You'll be like, that's too close. But Dana, you know, I appreciate very much that you are bringing voice to some of the harder issues. And it's important that educators get talking and we start listening to one another, regardless of whether it's a similar experience or whether we agree or disagree. Perspective is so powerful.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I think everybody can learn from each other wherever they live in the world, especially now as we're, you know, planning on returning to the building after COVID. And, you know, everybody's working in a different situation, but there's always ideas to get from each other. So I want to thank you so much for being a guest on the Out of the Trenches podcast. And
thank you.
You know, now we're just ending the school year. So I hope you have a great summer.
I will. I've got a lot of awesome things planned. So aside that are not work related, but yes, a lot of good stuff. So yeah. And I hope you have a great summer too. And thank you again for giving me space to share my story. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome.